Welcome to Why We Marathon, a podcast diving into the deep motivating factors for why people choose to run marathon races. Please welcome our guest today, Michael Selman. Thanks for joining us, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing great. My pleasure to be here. Can't wait to talk about running.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited as well. And, you know, just to get started here, I like to ask a few demographic questions just to see where marathoners are coming from in life. If you could share your age, your day job, and where you're located.
Sure. Well, I just turned 65 in October. And as any runner would know, every five-year age group is a monumental birthday. So I was really excited to hit the 65 to 69 age group. But I found that once I got there, it's just as competitive in the older groups as it is in the younger one. And for a day job, I work for a company that supports Dragon medical software. So I actually train doctors and staff how to use voice recognition software to document in medical documentation. And up until about a year ago, it was pretty much weekly travel, going to the different hospitals and clinics to work side by side with the providers. And then, of course, once COVID hit, I've been working remotely for the last year, doing most of my training over software like Zoom.
Excellent. And what was your very first marathon race? Let's start talking running.
Absolutely. Good. So you're going in and out a little bit. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry about that.
Okay, now I can hear you.
Perfect. So I was going to say, what was your very first marathon race?
Well, you know, my first marathon race was kind of an accidental marathon. I was living up on Long Island at the time. I forgot to mention I'm in Atlanta now.
Okay. And where on Long Island?
I was in Massapequa Park.
Okay. I'm from Plainview originally. So right nearby. And for all of our listeners out there, Massapequa was also the home, not only to Michael, but to Jerry Seinfeld.
Yes, it was. In fact, I knew his father pretty well personally. I didn't know Jerry, but I knew his father. And he was a funny guy too. And he said, you just watch my son. He's going to be big someday.
He was right.
I'm sure you're going to know about the marathon that I experienced then. It was the Long Island Marathon, which was held in the spring every year, right around Earth Day back then. And it was in 1983. And typically, the course would start in Eisenhower Park and go down to Jones Beach and then turn around and go back to Eisenhower Park. But this one year, when you got to Jones Beach, it actually made a turn and it finished in Long Beach. And there was an option of either a half or a full marathon. And my father, who was also a runner, and I both decided, well, you know, we're going to go ahead and run the half. And when we get to the halfway point, we'll see how we feel. And if we decide we want to keep on going, we're going to run the full marathon. And that's what happened. We both felt really good at the 13-mile mark. So we continued to go. And we both died between 17 and 18 miles in. And I kind of staggered to what at the time I thought was a slow 3:58 marathon, and realized as I got older that that wasn't a half bad time. But the Long Island Marathon was my first one, and it happened by accident.
Interesting. And what do you think about that race now, looking back? How many have you done since then, by the way?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I would probably have to go through my medals to know exactly how many I've run. Not that it's a humongous number, but I would say somewhere between 30 and 40. But over the years, they kind of blend in with the hundreds of half marathons I've done.
That's a good point. And
there's some courses I've done both. So not the same year. So I would say about 40 altogether, and I like to do destination marathons. So I've done quite a few local ones here in Georgia where I live now, but I also got heavily involved in the Rock and Roll Marathon series for a few years, and have just picked other nice destinations to go to run marathons and vacation.
I think that's one of the most beautiful things about marathon racing. There's so many towns and cities out there that host them, and you could really see the world, which, you know, it's interesting. I think this has been a really big trend among us, a lot of our guests, seeing the world through marathon running and just getting out there, putting on your running shoes and seeing what's out there. So I am curious, 30 to 40 is quite a lot of marathons. Do you have a favorite destination that you went to?
You know, my favorite destination is actually one I never got to run. I signed up for it twice and ended up injured both times, and that's Big Sur out in Monterey, California. That's the most scenic marathon I haven't run. But I went out there both years. My wife did it 1 year. And like I said, you know, part of the reason that I travel to run marathons is to go to the different destinations. So just because I can't run a race isn't going to stop me from going out. But probably the favorite one I've run is a local one here in North Georgia called Chickamauga, which is on a battlefield just south of Chattanooga, Tennessee. And it's a two-loop rolling marathon that is very personalized. The race direction is amazing. And if this is somebody's first marathon, they actually have a framed shadow box with the race number in it that they present to the runner at the finish line. So they look a couple miles ahead to see when the runner is about to finish, and they present them with it at the finish line.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's a low-key organized race, and I really... honestly prefer the smaller marathons much better than the mega ones personally.
Why so?
Because I run primarily to just kind of let my mind wander and to think, and I generally don't run with other people. And sometimes with the bigger marathons, there's a lot of weaving in and out in order to position yourself where you want to on a course. And I've run marathons with fewer than 50 people, and they've been some of my most enjoyable, because it's just like a very long training run.
I like that, just with a few friends and some fellow runners. I've only done New York, Philly, and LA, so I think after doing a lot of these interviews now, I'm excited to try some of these smaller races. You know, see what the vibes are like, what the communities are like out there, and to your point, just go on destination runs. Now yeah, Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, maybe after this podcast, I could recommend a few to you.
That'd be great. I would love that. You could recommend them now to all of our listeners.
You're on mute again.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can.
Yep. I said you could recommend them now to all of our listeners.
Well, they're, you know, just in Georgia, there's quite a few. There's a small one out by Savannah called Tybee Island. That's a February race. There's one in mid-Georgia called Callaway Gardens. That's also very pretty, fairly low key. It's a marathon and a half marathon. So you're running with quite a few people the first half, and then the second loop you run much more alone. Cause most of that race is half marathoners and they peel off. But Chickamauga is another one I would highly recommend, both for the scenery and for the race organization. And that's up, like I said earlier, by Chattanooga area, but it's on the Georgia side of the border.
Excellent. Now let's just go back into sort of your first few marathons and what really got you started and prompted to run marathon races.
Well, I'll be honest, I enjoy marathons as a challenge. It's actually not my favorite distance. I really like half marathons. And even now at age 65, I do at least one organized half marathon a month when I can find them available. But once in a while, you just really have to test yourself. And there's a different feeling at the starting line of a marathon than there is any other shorter distance, I think, because you know that you are surrounded by a bunch of people who each have their own unique story for why they're there to begin with. And it's just an entirely different atmosphere than just running a 5K or a 10K.
Go ahead, Michael. So you were talking about the 5K and the 10K?
Yeah, so 5Ks and 10Ks, I think for a lot of people are fairly routine distances. So there isn't the same kind of excitement and energy as there is when you're running a marathon. And you know, everybody has their own story of why they're running the same race that you are. So even though the goal of everyone is to hit the finish line, everybody's reasons for doing it are different. And I think one of my reasons is just to test my outer limits. And it feels really good to finish one. And there are a couple in particular that I had specific reasons for. And one of them was my most recent one. Last year it was March 1st. I did the Publix Marathon, and you'll recall early March last year is when all of a sudden COVID dominated everything and races started shutting down. And the reason I wanted to do the Publix Marathon was a little bit different than my normal motivation. In Atlanta, they have something called an Ultimate Peach Series, where if you run the Peachtree Road Race, which is the largest 10K in the world, and then you run the PNC 10 miler, and you run the Atlanta Half Marathon, and then you finish it off the next year with the Publix Marathon, you get a special commemorative medal that really only a handful of people earn, because those four races are a pretty large commitment. And I had done the first three, and it really hadn't even entered my mind to run Publix. But with about a month before the race, I said, you know, I'm doing half marathons all the time. I probably don't have to do that much extra training. And I want to finish this race so that I can have the status of earning the ultimate peach medal. And so I did. And the next week I went to Myrtle Beach and ran a half marathon there. And that was pretty much the end of racing as we know it. Because the week after that is when everything started shutting down.
Wow, that's amazing that you were able to squeeze that in right before COVID.
Yeah, I mean, if COVID had hit a month earlier, I wouldn't have had either one of those experiences. And everything would have been a little bit different. The other marathon that I had a special reason for running is I had taken a voluntary separation from a company I was working for before my current one. And so I had time, and I hired a coach to help me really train for a marathon, because even though I had done several of them, so it was like whenever anyone asked me, what is your marathon PR? My answer would be, I don't know. I haven't run it yet, because I always knew that if I trained right, I could run a quicker time than any of them I had logged up to that point. So when I was 48 years old and I had the time because I was between jobs, I hired a coach who coached me on effort-based training using a heart rate monitor, which I had never done before. And he trained me to running a PR marathon a day after my 49th birthday. And that was
That's incredible.
And that was the first time I could actually answer with the number when somebody asked me what my PR was. So this is why I like age graded times too. My time wasn't that spectacular. It was a 3:53.
Hey, but, Michael, I'm 30 and that beats my PR. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I was happy with it. It was the only marathon I've ever run that I knew at the starting line that I was ready to run this complete race.
And amazing. Now I am curious, you know, you did so many marathons without a coach and then you decided to get a coach. You know, I think a lot of people sort of debate when they start marathon running, do I need a coach? Do I not need a coach? What's, you know, sort of run through that process. What went through your head when you wanted to sign up the coach, and how was that experience overall, you know, getting coached, you know, by a real professional runner?
At first I didn't really like it, because once, once he got me on the effort-based training with the heart rate monitor, I was doing everything by heart rate rather than minutes per mile, which is how I always thought. You know, I want to train at a 9:30 pace. I want to train at a 10-minute pace. But with a heart rate monitor, now I was training between 130 and 100 beats per minute. And initially, I was doing all of my miles a minute or two slower than I was on my own. And I didn't like that. But what happened was over time, as my heart truly was getting the rest that it needed, it got stronger. And with the same heart rate, now I was doing 9-minute miles instead of 10 and a half minute miles. So I learned that effort-based training really works, but you got to stick to the plan. And I would say a heart rate monitor never lies. You know, it tells you what kind of shape your heart is in.
Definitely, that's a great tip.
Yeah, so I didn't like it at the beginning because I was running almost all my miles slower than I wanted to. And I couldn't wait for my tempo run day so that I could open it up a little bit. But it was kind of difficult at first. And actually, once I ran that marathon, I stopped using a coach.
Awesome. And now I am curious, what's something you didn't know about yourself before running marathons that you learned after completing, you know, 30 to 40 of them, or even just, you know, the first few?
I didn't know I could be a long distance runner, period. I won't say I actually learned anything revolutionary about myself, except that in order to get results, you have to put in the work. And if you don't put in the work, then you're going to suffer. So not every marathon is enjoyable when you're going through it. And if you're undertrained and you try to run a marathon like you're trained, it doesn't work. And if you do train properly for a race, it does work. But there's a median, there's a middle of the road too. So after I ran Long Island, I ran the New York Marathon in 1986. And then I didn't run another marathon for 10 years. And partly it was because the New York experience wasn't a really good one for me. And then I felt I had to be trained properly. And then I was introduced to the Jeff Galloway method of training, which allowed walk breaks in your training. And so I started doing some of my longer runs, walking a minute every mile. And what I found is that I could go more distance that way, and I could recover more quickly that way. And I wouldn't say that I could run a better time that way, but after 10 years of not running any marathons at all and using the Galloway method, I actually ran 4 marathons in a 3-month period. And all of them were right around the 4-hour range. And I felt great at the end. So I learned that there's different ways to train, but the way you train is going to determine your results.
Yep, that's a great point. And I did just interview Jeff Galloway recently, so I'm excited for his podcast, and great to hear that, you know, you use that walk around walk method or run walk around method, because I think it makes a huge difference there. So that's great to hear, Michael. I am curious, you know, do you have a favorite marathon out of all 30 or 40?
I would say Chickamauga is probably my favorite. I've done that 3 times, and I've actually signed up again to do it this year in November. So I wouldn't keep on going back to a marathon over a 20-year period if I didn't like it a lot. And what I like about it is it's a rolling course, but it's not too challenging. And it's at a time of year that's good for running, but living in Atlanta, training for a November marathon is difficult because you have to do some of your long runs in August and September when it's still pretty warm out. But every time I've run that race, it's been comfortable. I always see deer running along the course. So even though it's on a battlefield, it's a very pretty course. And it's also nice. It's close enough to home that I can drive up in the morning. And then if I want to spend some time up in Chattanooga and drive home that night.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. Make it a little day trip.
Yep.
I love that. And now what would you say is the most scenic marathon that you've done?
That may be my most scenic also. I wish I had had a chance to run Big Sur, because I know I would have found that to be the most scenic. That's on a lot of people's favorite marathon destination bucket list. So I got to live that one through my wife's eyes, because she ran it 1 year and she took pictures along the way. But that's just such a pretty part of the country, and very scenic marathon. I think anyone who's run it would probably agree with that.
Amazing. Sounds beautiful. I haven't been able to run in that part of the country, but I would love to get down there and see what it's like. Now, I am curious, do you listen to music when you run, or have any playlist recommendations? What is sort of your theory on running with music or no headphones?
So I can play music in my head. When I run, I want to hear the birds. I want to hear the wind. I want to hear the nature that's around me. But that's not to say I don't play songs in my head. And the playlist, what's nice about, you know, playing the music in your head rather than through iTunes or something like that, is that you can play whatever you want at whatever speed you want, anytime you want. And what I tend to do when I sing to myself in my head is I'll pick songs that are 3/4 time, because I've learned and been coached that 180 steps a minute is an ideal marathon cadence. And if I can just get in a rhythm where I'm doing 3/4 time at 3 beats a second, then that adds up exactly to 180 beats a minute. I don't know if that makes any sense to you or not.
Yeah, it's interesting. I haven't heard of anyone else doing that, but I like the idea.
But the interesting thing is there aren't a lot of 3/4 beat songs that have upbeat tempos to them. And I think that works for me too, because like if you think of 3/4 time music, that would be things like waltzes and that kind of music. But there is some pop music that's 3/4 time too. Like just as an example, Norwegian Wood and songs like that. So I find that even playing mellower music in my head kind of helps me relax and save my adrenaline for the running.
You know, that's interesting. I've had a few people recommend slower music or jazz music, and I'm always upbeat tempo, keep me going. But I'm going to try that out, I think, on a few long runs that I have coming up here, just to see what it's like to slow down a little bit and take it all in. So love that recommendation, Michael. How about just in terms of, you know, training and gear? Do you have any sort of training recommendations or tips for people that have run a lot of marathons, or any sort of marathon hacks or something taboo that people might not be talking about that, you know, after doing 30 or 40, you're sort of like, you should know this going into your first one?
Well, it's interesting. When COVID hit, my training changed totally, because I went from traveling all the time, which made running every day a bit of a challenge, because I'd be somewhere different every week. And I'm 100% outdoor runner. I've never run on a treadmill in my life, I don't think. So every time I'm somewhere new, trying to find route to run that'll give me the mileage I want, plus navigating that with a work schedule can be difficult. One thing I would say is be a little bit leery of everything that you hear the experts say. And the reason I say that is if you hear over and over again, especially if you're an older runner, you're too old to run every day, you're too old to run this many miles. Well, when I stopped traveling, now I had time to run around my own neighborhood every morning. And actually, when I bought this house about 20 years ago, the only request I had for the realtor is I want a house where I can just go out the front door and run as many miles as I want to. So when he gave it to me. I mean, I can run, I can train for a marathon. I can do a 20-mile long run right from my front door and not repeat any steps too much. But when COVID hit, I started running every day kind of by accident, just because I had the time. And so I know this is getting off the subject a little bit, but about 6 years ago, I developed an autoimmune condition, psoriatic arthritis, that until it was diagnosed, I thought that my body was aging 10 years every month. It started in my feet and it worked its way up my entire body just over a period of months, where even rolling over in bed at night was difficult. I had stop running. I couldn't even walk a block without suffering, you know, and paying my dues for it a little bit later. And it took almost a year to be diagnosed. So at that point, I thought not only was my marathon career over, but my running life was over. I mean, I couldn't even pick up my grandkids. It hurt so much. After about a year, it was finally correctly diagnosed, because it took that long for them to figure out what it was. They actually thought it was they thought it was Lyme disease, and I didn't think I'd ever, you know, be a whole person again. But once they got me on the right medications, I slowly started to heal. And so this was all going on when I turned 60. And from 60 to 61, I don't think I ran a step. And once I felt healthy enough to start running again, I started with a mile here, a mile there. And never in my wildest dreams did I think I'd ever be able to be competitive again. And over the last 4 years, just was slowly building up my mileage. I've set 60 and over PRs for myself in just about every distance, every year since I turned 62. And some of the times I'm running now are rivaling times I ran in my mid 50s before I had any of these health issues. So I guess what I'm getting at is don't let yourself be limited by what's in your head about what you can do. After I turned 60, once COVID hit and I was able to have running available every day, I started running every day again. And all of last year, I only missed 15 total days of running. And I only missed 2 days from the middle of April to the end of the year. And at one point I had a running streak of over 250 days. And it wasn't just a mile here, a mile there. My minimum run was usually 5 or 6 miles. And I actually ended up with 2,100 miles for the year last year, which I hadn't done when I was younger. And if you listen to some of the experts, they'll say once you hit a certain age, don't run every day, give yourself a rest day. And I would use the George Sheehan quote, which is every person is an experiment with one of one. And you need to figure out for yourself what works for you. And don't necessarily listen to other people's advice or criticism or whatever you'd want to call it if they say you're doing more than you should for your age.
Wow, that's an amazing story, Michael. The fact that you're able to come back after that and continue running, you know, it's pretty amazing. Just the determination that you had and sort of sheer will. And was marathon running sort of just always top of mind? You wanted to get back into it?
I guess a marathon was always on my mind again, but one of the things that was kind of cool about running the Publix marathon last year is I didn't really realize it until right before, but my first marathon was in the 1980s. And then I've run at least one marathon in every decade since then. So, you know, I can proudly say I've run marathons in 5 different decades.
And that's an amazing statistic.
Yeah, I'm probably as proud of that as any running accomplishment that I've done. And so now I'm looking at the next 5 years, and when I turn 70, at least having a goal of running a marathon after I turn 70, so that I could say that I've run a marathon in six different decades, not necessarily calendar decades, but that I've run one in my 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. And with the kind of fitness level I'm at now, if everything goes well, I don't really see anything stopping me from doing that. But you always have to cross your fingers, because the other thing that any marathon runner knows is that something can happen tomorrow and you won't be able to run anymore. And you really need to embrace each run and nurture it and have a relationship with it and know that it can be gone tomorrow. So appreciate today.
I couldn't agree with you more, Michael. I've learned that the hard way in my life. My mother passed away suddenly, when I was 28, and you just can't take things for granted. And, you know, if you have the chance to run a marathon and your body can do it, you should do it. So I love that mentality. Now, I am curious, you sent me over a bunch of really beautiful photos before the interview, with you and your father. I'm curious, what sort of your relationship's like with your father and how running was a major part of that.
So let me tell you this for a few minutes, and I'll try not to cry while I get to parts of it, but I'll give you advance notice that I may at some point. But my father was a runner back from the 60s and the 70s. And the only reason that he ran was because he was trying to manage high blood pressure. And his doctor told him, you needed to run. You need to run to get your blood pressure down. And in the 60s and 70s, we were all called joggers, and we weren't a very common sight. And he actually got pulled over by a cop one time on a run, wanting to know what he was running away from. And so he was doing that in the 60s and 70s. And he and I really didn't have all that much in common. He was like I am today. He traveled a lot for his work, so he wasn't really home a lot. But in the back of my mind, I always said, I'd like to run with him someday. So that was one of my motivations for starting to run in the early 80s. And I started running April of 1982. And the thing about my father is that even though he ran, he never had an interest in racing. He just ran for his health. And when I started running, I was instantly gravitated to races. So I'll mention a couple races that you'll probably recognize because they're both still around. The first race that I ever did, really, once I considered myself a runner, was the Shelter Island 10K, which is on an island between the North and South Fork of Long Island that you had to get to by ferry. And the next week, there was a race in Massapequa called the Firecracker 5K. And my father ran that race with me. And that was actually the first time we ran together. And we didn't really run together that particular race because he beat me by about a minute. I was a brand new runner and he had been running for 20 years. And I did like 25 and a half minutes and he did 24 and a half. So I was amazed that I was amazed I could even keep an eye on him, for the first mile of the race. But I was young and I was new to running. So by the end of the year, I was running 5Ks close to 20 minutes. So that was the only race he really legitimately beat me in. But when I was still living in New York, we developed a routine where I would take the train into the city. And he would meet me there because he was living in the city at the time. And we would go to Central Park. And this was back in the Fred LeBeau days and the George Sheehan days. And we would run whatever race the New York Roadrunners was putting on that weekend. And the routine was that I would always pace him. So I didn't run my race, but he was pretty competitive once he got into racing. And he wanted to run some better times than he had been running. And he was in his mid-50s then. And I didn't realize then what a good runner he was for his age group. Because, for me being in my mid-20s, I could just kind of trot along and he would be breathing hard and we would finish a 5K in 23 and a half minutes. And I was feeling like, man, if I ever run a 5K that slowly, just shoot me. I didn't know that that was
that's great.
I didn't know that was a really competitive time for someone in his upper 50s. And I found that out when I hit my mid 50s and I couldn't come close to those times. But I would say, you know, in training with him and in pacing him in those races, we really grew a very tight bond that never loosened up for the rest of his life. And I got more satisfaction out of pacing him to a PR for him than I ever got out of any PR for me. So one race that stands out in particular, he was 65 years old at the time, which is the age I am now, is he was living in Wilmington, North Carolina then. And there was a half marathon up at Camp Lejeune in Jacksonville, North Carolina, about an hour up the road. And I offered to try to pace him to a sub 2 hour marathon, a half marathon. So think about that. Someone 66 years old or 65 years old, even entertaining the thought of running a half marathon in under 2 hours.
And that's unbelievable, honestly. I can't imagine that right now. I'm trying to break four over here and I'm 30 years old. So that is, gosh, quite an accomplishment.
Yeah. And I'm talking about for a half marathon, not a full. Right.
Oh, I see. Okay. That's a good point. Still pretty amazing.
I mean, that's still a fast race. That's a 9 minute mile for someone who's 65 years old.
Oh, that's amazing. Honestly, I'm only more impressed doing more of these interviews and talking to people, you know, that have been running for decades. It's just, it's unbelievable and a real testament. I think just to, you know, the mindset and the will and training of runners, you know, in general. So that's some great stories you got there, Michael. Now, you know, I'd like to wrap up a few last fun questions for the podcast here. One of my favorite parts about marathon racing is the signs on the race course. Do you have any favorite signs that you've seen over the years at one of the 30 or 40 marathons you've run?
I've seen some pretty funny ones. I've seen "Run Like You Stole Something."
Which probably hit home for you, huh? After your dad's story.
That's true. And there aren't really any that come to mind, but that's, you know, maybe one at like a 3 mile mark of a marathon, you're almost there. And then the 22 mile mark of a marathon that says looking good, because nobody looks good at the 22 mile point of a marathon.
That's funny. Yeah, that's a good point. Nobody does look good there. That's always the wall where people hit it, usually 18, 20, 22, always tough there. All right. So those are some good signs there. Now I am
can I hijack you for 1 second?
Of course. Yeah.
Cause I wanted to tell you a little bit more about that half marathon and the legacy of it.
Oh, sure. Please. Please.
Yeah. We wanted to break 2 hours. And we ended up running 2 hours and 14 seconds. And he was on pace for the first 10 miles, and then he kind of faded the last 3 miles, but still toughed it out. And it's unbelievable how much he missed it by. So now that I'm 65, when I had recovered from my illness and started training again, I made my personal goal to try to run that 2 hour marathon in his honor. You know, or 2 hour half marathon in his honor. And that has been my focus for the last year, is to be able to break 2 hours and a half marathon again. And unfortunately, and I wanted to do it before he passed away. And he and my mom were in a long-term care facility that unfortunately had COVID run through it at the end of the year last year. And my last attempt to break 2 hours was about a week or two before that. And I fell a little bit short. I ran a 2:02. And then unfortunately he passed away the last day of the year last year at 94.
I'm sorry to hear that, but you know, I'm sure he'd be super proud of you for everything you've accomplished. And I think you're going to get under two pretty soon once these races start opening up again.
I still have that goal. And
I love that. And I think that's a beautiful way to honor your father and that relationship.
Thank you.
Well, you know, Michael, I think that's a pretty great way, I think, to sort of recap the episode. You know, I mean, really touching story that you have some personal barriers that you've accomplished. Hats off to you for running, you know, for decades, five different decades for marathons is quite a feat that not many people can say that they've done. So hats off to you. And I have one last question here that I ask all of our guests. The podcast is called Why We Marathon. And I just want you to sum up in 2 to 3 sentences, just really the crux of why you run marathon races.
I run marathon races for self-satisfaction. I run marathon races because they represent a lot of discipline and focus and commitment. And in order to run a marathon well, you really do have to put in a lot of commitment and time in order to run one successfully. And any of the steps that are involved in training a marathon also apply to everything else in life. Anything worth getting requires time, requires effort, requires discipline. And I think that, you know, running a marathon and training properly for one, more importantly, what I like to say is you learn more. You don't learn as much by finishing a marathon as you do by preparing for one. And those lessons carry over to everything else in life. So that's kind of how I feel about it. And as long as I'm running, I'll keep on throwing a marathon in there every once in a while, just for the experience of the journey.
I absolutely love that, Michael. The key is in the preparation. I think every marathon runner can totally relate to that. You know, you put in, you get out what you put in. So really, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. For all of our listeners out there, thank you for listening. Please follow us on Instagram at Why We Marathon and visit our website, www.whywemarathon.com, to see additional stories, photos, and recaps of each episode. And please rate and review our podcast and share episodes with your friends and family. Thank you so much for listening again. I'm your host, Alex Ellman, and I hope you enjoy listening to these amazing stories of human perseverance.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Michael.